Welcome to another episode of Outside the Pages. We have another special one for you today. As always, I'm Michael, also known as Poet Air, and I'm joined as always by my co-hosts.
It's me, Chaz, and of course, our third host and editor supreme.
It's me, Jack, aka Synesthetic.
So joining us today is Junie Ba, the author and creator of Julia.
Hello.
Thank you so much for coming on, Junie. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Getting over my second dose of Moderna, but I'm glad to be vaccinated.
Works out well, though. Yeah, one less step.
Yeah.
No, but I get the fear. I received my first yesterday, 2 days ago.
Oh, nice.
I have a weird outing of time now.
Yeah, it's not as bad as people have told me. I just felt kind of like I was getting over the flu last night for like an hour, but now I feel pretty much back to normal.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people there is a lot of like fear of it, and then. Mm-hmm. It turns out that actually it's a vaccine. That stuff has existed for quite a while, and it did pretty well for most people.
Yep.
It's only saved populations for the last century many times.
Yep. Yeah,
pretty much. Yeah, I mean, they've had like this specific kind of vaccine in development for like 10 years before now.
Tune
in for COVID-19 specifically, but you know, for other COVIDs, they had already been working on the technology.
Yeah, for SARS and MERS and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So you wrote a great book that's a lot of fun and whimsical called Julia, which you taught me quite a lot about West African culture and folklore that I didn't know nothing about. I knew some of the symbols in the back of your book, but it's quite inspiring that there is a person who used music and counseling to kind of inspire, you know, the people around them, and then even, you know, cultures and villagers. And that's our main character, Awa, and then Mansour, and they kind of go on an adventure. But what inspired you to do the book? I know that you had a lot of influence from Cartoon Network and manga, which we're going to definitely want to talk to you about. We're actually doing a manga season right now. But what kind of got the gears running that made you say, like, this is the book I want to get out there?
It started with the base concept of doing stories on this kind of subject. I went back to my hometown in Senegal in 2013, I think, and essentially what I did was visit the street where I spent a good 5 to 6 years of my childhood, and where most of my imagination grew, I guess, and due to a lot of different reasons, I had to move from there, and the house has been like totaled and everything. So every time I go back home, I go to that specific street just to look at it, and at the entrance of that street, you have a small shop of old, not even old, like statues, African art type of stuff, the type of stuff that you sell to like tourists and made them believe that it's super old and super charged with energy and stuff like that, which, yeah, I have found the same objects sold by a French shop in the French city I live in now. And she is lying to people saying that, like, is this white French woman lying about how she found those old ritual objects? Anyway. But I mean, that gives me an idea of why I wanted to do the book in the first place. Like, I entered that shop and I just looked at a bunch of stuff and I thought, well, I've been reading books made by people who are using their own culture for, you know, my whole life. And as they should, like, that's the very basic, most obvious thing to do, most obvious inclination to do. And I just figured I've never seen a book of the vein of Naruto or Dragon Ball or something like that that just takes the culture of the creator and just makes a complete fantasy out of it. And I thought, yeah, that would be fun. So like that was literally just that, that would be fun. So I started making my own characters, and I think I spent a good 3 years trying to figure out what the aesthetic would be before I even started writing this book specifically. And from then, you just start to ask yourself, like, what kind of stories do I want to tell? What kind of subjects do I want to tackle? What do I want to say with it? And the pieces kind of start fitting into each other. and you end up with what the book ended up being. And yeah, I'm kind of curious to like reread this book in 5 years' time just to see how I changed, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of writers that we follow or had on are people's big biographies we like you can see the total changes from the earlier books to later books. It's kind of a cool goal to have for yourself. This book is like, I have a young daughter. This book is so educational. Like, this is a great book to give her when she's a little older. Like, it teaches them so much about kind of that culture in West Africa, and also just the original meanings of symbols, kind of where you talk about the swastika originally as a Hindu symbol and not, you know, what it's known for. Whereas yeah. I feel like that's what they teach in schools. Like, when you're a kid, you kind of get that baseline of being like, this symbol is evil, but it's not really evil, just evil people used it. And then it's kind of what it's known for. And then I was going to, which is weird, is the all-seeing eye symbol in African culture. It's actually this YouTuber girl has used that for her icon for like, I think like 8 years now, and I didn't know what it was. And I saw it in your book, and I was like, that's freaking Rainbot's symbol. And I was like, oh, it's a West African symbol for the all-seeing eye. And I'm just kind of now like, where did she get that from? Or maybe she was just doing research and was like, this is cool. Obviously, you like Naruto, as you said, and in Dragon Ball. We're big manga and anime fans. We're doing a whole manga season right now. I'm bigger on Naruto than Dragon Ball myself. And Jack, Naruto is like his favorite manga and anime of all time. So I'm sure you guys could talk about that. But that was one of my main questions is, well, you already answered it, was what manga or anime had the most influence over you this book or as your writing style? So, I mean, is it just pretty much Naruto and Dragon Ball, or there's some other ones out there?
I would say the biggest ones were Shaman King and Full Metal Alchemist.
Nice.
Ooh, those are both great.
Some good pulls there.
I'm not so much into manga now. I mostly blame the fact that I spent my entire teenage years just consuming almost just that. So I got to the level of like, I can't read most shonen because they tend to use the same sentences a lot. And also little things that for some reason started getting to me, like someone saying something and then someone repeating something as a question, like repeating the thing as a question. It's little details. But yeah, the teenage years were spent reading a lot of Shaman King and Tsubasa Reservoir Chronicle. And the base thing, I think, is that I started reading comics with French productions first, because my country was a French colony. We still have a lot of like French imports, culturally speaking. And so the Franco-Belgian comics were the first things I was exposed to. And then there was the big manga phase when I was a teenager. And I think I was 13 or 14 and convinced my grandma to buy me number 15 of Shaman King. And it's actually very funny because she said, you're never going to do anything useful out of this. And anyway.
Now you drew this book. Yeah, now you got a book coming out from PKO. That's rad. Yeah.
That's the fun part. It's like I wish I could have like the footage of my life, because it would be very nice to have that scene of her telling me, I'm not going to buy you this. It's ugly. It's useless. You're never going to do anything with this. And then cut to what was basically after my last year of art school, coming with the first chapter of what ended up serving as a test for the Aliyah and showing it to her. And that's the first time that I showed her a piece of comic book fantasy that she actually got. Because when you show her Naruto or all the stuff like that, she just goes, that's ugly, I don't understand. When you show her a book like this, it's her culture. So I didn't even need to name the characters. Like, there are archetypes in this that she actually knows just from growing up with them. So I just put into a comic something that she had all her life and just had never seen in that form specifically. So yeah, I think in the end, like, I kind of managed to prove the usefulness of manga to my grandmother. To my own personal.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's really cool.
What she thought was useless was like Prometheus lighting fire.
Shaman King, Full Metal. Naruto was a big one because I think it was like the biggest with One Piece. I was never much into One Piece, but Naruto was like the big one that everyone was, every nerd was talking about on the playground when I was a teenager. We had big debates about who is Toby, and then I won, and I'm very satisfied.
Awesome.
Yeah, man, so, I remember my mind was blown by that reveal. that tripped me out for a while.
I was just so like, obvious.
What? I know, but like in my mind, I think part of me talked myself out of it because I was like, it can't be that. It's right there in front of us, so it's got to be something like richer. There's got to be a bigger thing. So yeah. I don't know.
I'm just glad he never won.
I don't know, it's pretty rich.
The Game of Thrones vibe. He never went with the Game of Thrones solution of like hiding the actual obvious solution and finding something weird instead.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I am not familiar with African folklore, and probably a lot of our listeners aren't. So I was wondering if, like, what you did draw from African folklore, because you know it's obviously like your own story, but with the inclusion and incorporation of the folk tales. So
yeah.
So I was just curious, like, about that.
The trick was to, there is a lot of stuff that I found and wanted to use in this book that I ended up not using. I had actually like written entire characters, entire backstories, designed them. I had entire chapters and storylines that had to be put out because basically I think it started when because I grew up there, I have my own feelings and opinions about what it's like to live there. And a lot of what I saw there actually applies to a lot of what happens around the world, especially some of the themes that are taught in the book about the use of propaganda and what kind of story you tell your people and how you build an identity around it. And the effect of superstition and believing things simply because you were told. And that's actually something that's very universal. But I wanted to use very specific West African things to talk about those subjects. So what I did was I sort of used this as an excuse to dive into all the stuff about my own people and history that I didn't necessarily know much about, but always heard about. So there is the story of Sundiata Keita, the founder of the Mali Empire, whose story is basically mentioned by everyone in West Africa because everyone more or less knows, but not everyone has actually read it or listened to it, rather, because it's an oral history first and foremost. So I started with that one. And used a lot of folk tales because that's what I grew up on. Just stories about animals doing stuff. A lot of history, like actual history, just looking at different figures before colonization, because a lot of the way we approach African history tends to revolve a lot around how much we lost instead of talking about what it was like before. And from there, I just started picking and choosing whatever felt like was fitting for the stories I wanted to tell. So I read a folktale story about a guy walking in a field and bumping into a djinn creature. And I'm like, that's a pretty nice concept. Let me use that. I read about this historical figure who did this and that. And I figured that would be interesting to actually put in a story to comment on that kind of action, especially when you read about the behavior of one king or ruler eons ago and you compare with what's happening now in a completely different part of the world and you're like, this is basically the same thing.
Yeah.
And then, there's a lot of it was research for myself, and it taught me a lot about, like, it gave me a lot more context and details about stuff that was around me when I was a kid that I didn't necessarily understand. And the book is a result of all that research that I guess I streamlined to sort of get to more of a clear point towards the end. So yeah, I think I managed it fairly well because the early version of the book was maybe twice the size.
I mean, I'd love to meet some of those characters eventually too.
Like, yeah.
Like if there's ever a extension of this universe, I'm in. I'm ready to read it.
I have the pitch ready already. I have written.
Oh, nice.
All right.
I have written more.
I really wanted to ask earlier when you were talking about how it sort of came together. You said that you started sort of drawing some of the figures out, or drawing some of the ideas out of what the book was going to look like, and then we're building the characters, I guess, as they were sort of taking shape. Is that coming from like your history of doing an art first, sort of, and then like the story with it? Like, do you think you tell? I guess I'm trying to ask if you think you tell stories predominantly through the art,
yeah,
or if it's the words as well. Like, what's your...
I often say that if I could make comics without words, I would. But unfortunately, a lot of what I want to do story-wise doesn't really work unless you have text. But yeah, it kind of went hand in hand since I was a kid. Drawing and making stories was always one thing as a whole, which is why it was always weird to me when I started looking into the American scene of comics, and I realized that people were actually dividing work a lot. Like, you have the writer and the artist and the letterer and the colorist, and I was like, I do all of that.
Right.
so there is still the fear of, like, you know, the whole jack of all trades, master of none kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I think because I grew up with the French and even manga influence, there is this notion of, like, I was always kind of expecting to just do everything myself. So I see everything as serving the story. So the art is story itself, kind of. The design of a character, yeah, is always story driven, and very often I either start with a drawing that I think is cool, and then I try to make a story out of it, or I have an idea of what I want, and then I draw a character that's the closest to what kind of vibe I want him to have.
Okay.
Yeah. So story and art are basically the same thing, just visuals and text go together. There's no difference. Like, even the way I construct the story is done with storyboard. There was no script for Dialia.
Oh wow.
I storyboarded the whole thing from the get-go. Even my notebook is just full of notes and sketches of what the page is supposed to look like. There was no script. So Sebastian Gerner kept receiving storyboards of the book itself, and he would give me notes based on that, and I think that helps a lot, because again, the whole thing goes together. There is no writing a script and then hoping that the visuals are going to translate whatever you wanted. Everything is cohesive because it was designed all together.
Yeah. Like, looking at the book right now, there's a lot of instances, I think, where it does, if I'm not looking at the words, that there are beats that I can follow,
yeah,
in the art that are telling it as well. So I thought, I was curious to see, like, what the process was, but knowing that there wasn't that your script was a storyboard is, like, incredible. Like, I've never heard of that done once, and I love the, like, idea of it, because you're right, the two things are so entrenched, like you're saying, with them,
yeah,
the French comics and manga, that the authorship really goes with the artistry a lot of the times, because it's the same person doing both jobs. So, like, having those influences and now seeing this influence and knowing that you did it all storyboarded out, and we're getting notes on storyboards that you're drawing so that everything would come together,
yeah,
cohesively is, like,
and I mean,
kudos, amazing.
I can't really take credit for it, because that's actually a process that I stole from the Samurai Jack team.
Okay. Hey, that's a good team to steal from, so it's all good.
I mean, I learned about that process when I was, I think, in my early years of art school. and learning about how, I like learning how my favorite things are made. And as I was learning how comic books in America are produced, I was kind of, I really hated the idea of being put into one corner of like, you have to do this job and you have to delegate this or that part to someone else. I don't have a problem with delegating, but I don't want to be put in a box, essentially. So I was really glad to like find that my favorite cartoon had that very basic system of we don't storyboard, we don't script anything, we storyboard directly, and every episode of the show was done that way. And that's why it was so visually driven and interesting. It's because, again, you don't have words, so you have to think visually first. And that's kind of the mindset that I try to approach every comic I do now.
That's cool finding that out, because Tartakovsky just fully took that with Primal, where the words aren't even necessary yeah. anymore.
Yep, exactly. So,
yeah. Just roars.
I gotta say, I love the owl throughout this that kind of plays the music and kind of, you know, represents the music of the Jalea. And the way that it's a beatbox, I was kind of wondering if there's any like contemporary music that's not like traditional West African music that you kind of thought of, or is like the kind of music you think would be playing?
So the type of music is definitely inspired by like current Nigerian music. Because that's most of what I was listening to, like a lot of music from Ghana and Nigeria, a bit from Senegal. But the boombox itself came because my dad showed me do the right thing when I was a kid. and my dad loves Spike Lee, so like the character with the huge boombox, I don't know why he just left an impression on me. So when it came time to like imagine the aesthetic of the world, even before Jalea was even a concept, I started putting a boombox here and there, because I find them very like, I like the aesthetic of like 80s and 90s stuff. Because it's very big, blocky things, big computers, very visually striking stuff. Because a lot of it is because they couldn't yet reduce the size of stuff. But the effect is that a lot of it is very, I don't want to say brutish, but like it has a very striking and very easy to draw aesthetic that I really like. So like today we have our phones. At the time, you had a huge ass boombox that you would carry on your shoulder. And I thought that was cool.
Yeah. No, it's got a real exaggerated quality.
Yeah, exactly.
The 80s and 90s stuff, it's like cartoony in a way, but not.
And I think it applies well, because I can see the big influence from the like 90s Cartoon Network in the art.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I would be curious to rewatch the Powerpuff Girls, actually, just because I know that I stole a bunch of like. It was one of those shows that I would watch very intently because of the way the visual storytelling is done.
Yeah,
and even as a kid, even when you don't yet have the words and the technicalities of how it works, you still get a sense of it. So you just sit on your couch and you watch, and you analyze every shot.
Yeah.
So yeah, the 90s Cartoon Network was a big, I'm really glad that reruns exist, because I started watching it in the 2000s and I would just spend my entire days watching Cartoon Network and manga all day.
That's what's up.
Yeah.
That's the dream.
We're getting that like 90s resurgence right now too. This is off kind of off subject, but one of the funniest stories is they're doing that like edgy adult Powerpuff.
Yeah.
Reboot.
I don't know.
The craziest thing to me is they passed on the pilot and are making them reshoot it because they said it was too campy. And all I could think is, wait, it's Powerpuff Girls.
Too campy. Don't want it to be campy.
I don't understand.
It's got to be just enough. That's it. No more. Just enough.
Yeah, I took a look at the supposedly legit script that leaked and. Yeah, I'm tired.
I've been too afraid to look it up myself. I was really curious because a friend of mine did, and they like wouldn't stop talking about it. And I just like, I didn't even want to make it real in my mind. I just wanted it to be like a myth.
This is weird. Why wouldn't you just give us more of the cartoon?
kind of just blocked out the fact that they're even doing that.
Yeah, I think we all should, to be honest. Yeah. And I mean, it's only the first of an entire wave, I think, because...
Oh, I'm sure.
We're going to see all of it. Yeah, we're going to see Dexter's lab come back. And he's like an old Megalom. I did a joke the other day with them because we're seeing all this like resurgence of like adult-themed cartoon shows. And I was like, let's do a show where it's the gang from Scooby-Doo, but they've all split up. And Shaggy, upset that Scooby died, became a huge drug dealer in Northern California. Fred is now an undercover DEA agent.
Oh my God.
And his friends get killed by the drug dealer that's Shaggy. So he has to go undercover and kind of like find the strain that's called Mystery Machine and connect it to why it's familiar to their van and like have to go undercover to kind of take down Shaggy. I was doing it as a joke, but I bet they would actually do that.
Yeah, at this point, like,
yeah.
Yeah. Let's make this
a backdoor prequel to the first season of True Detective. That's what Russ Cole was doing undercover, and then he moved to Louisiana.
Russ Cole is really Fred out. From
yeah. That's his code That's name.
Yeah. I really like the morals of the story I was talking about before the show, but I mean, it teaches you, like I said, for my daughter, like there's a lot of not only like really good morals and how you should treat your community, but also shows, like you said, the propaganda, like. It still goes on today in the world where the disinformation, where that whole village is kind of gets spread by rumors until they're ripping each other apart.
Yeah.
And I think even though I think that's something good for future generations to realize, to kind of like know facts yourself and like not turn on your fellow man, brothers and sisters over stuff you can't verify.
Yeah.
You know, it's just because communities are very important. And I've seen stuff like that tear apart communities. And I've seen even today, as you say, so many of these themes in your book are still happening today, like it's just like a repeating cycle over and over again. And you know, it hopefully through education, through books like this, we can change that, or at least open people's minds to kind of get them on the right path and kind of not have those behavior traits, which I mean, I can only hope.
Yeah, 2020 was a really weird year for me because I was working on the book and then looking at the notes and thinking, I mean that's convenient for me, I guess. That makes the book really more relevant, but like I didn't expect it to happen this way.
Yeah.
I'm glad it worked out that way though.
2020 is just another thing where like we should have all been united because we're all dealing with the same situation, this COVID situation, but really it just caused a huge division and separation with everyone, which I mean we all are facing the same problem.
I don't really want to dig
a little bit.
Easy, deep into better. That, but I think that somehow it became a political disagreement. Well, somehow our crazy president here and
former president
decided to turn a global pandemic into a political disagreement. And yeah, pyramid I think scheme. That's things could have been so much better if it wasn't if doing the right thing wasn't a political. Move.
And it wasn't just here, it was in other countries too where their leaders did stuff similar to that. But yeah, we should have all just been united on a front and to kind of, you know, get rid of it.
Yeah, there was a lot of like France hasn't really dealt with the pandemic in the best way either. And it's actually one of the annoying things when you're working on a book like this, because the book was already written, but yeah, he gave me a bunch of ideas for a sequel. So like, you're just working on your story and trying to finish and writing the let's say the monologue of the villain, and you're thinking, well, that actually sounds like the way my president seems to be working. So I suppose that's legit.
Oh Lord,
I like that.
Is he as relevant? It's relevant worldwide, not just to us here.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. That was the big thing, I guess, of why I wanted to do it. Because aside from the whole fantasy aspect and the African aspect, there is this. Basically, I grew up watching and reading content from all kinds of places outside of my own country. But every time I would step out of my country, I would realize that no one was really looking at any of the content from my country. So essentially, when I was doing this story that's really broad in terms of scope, From the very beginning, you're told that some wizard just exploded the Earth out of nowhere. So this is literally a global issue. And I started thinking, in a situation like this, it would be very tempting to sort of limit it to try and only talk about issues specific to my region of the world. But actually, those themes apply to everyone. And so I try to make it, even visually, something that touches the whole globe and sort of find a sort of universality and specificity, I guess. And I kept saying that I grew up watching movies like Armageddon and Independence Day, where Americans apparently have the burden of saving the entire world, and you even have montages of people from all around listening on their radio about how the nice Americans are going to save everyone. And I figured, why don't you just reverse it, where one of the Indian people, for example, who's listening on the radio is actually the one going on in space to explode the big meteor. And the answer basically was just, well, Americans are making those movies because they're Americans. Indian people are probably making the same kinds of movies for themselves. Chinese people are doing it, so why not me?
Yeah.
So yeah, the whole point, I guess, was a story like this is just as global as any others, even if it's set in a space that we usually tend to look at as a very specific place where what's told is only applicable to that place. Like when you watch Blood Diamond, you're not really expected to take lessons that apply to the rest of the world. You're just supposed to be like, oh my God, isn't it scary what happens in that country?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the use of music and poetry, like the actual, like, the way that stories are shared and told is especially good at embodying that universality or that yeah. globality, what's going on. Because I think music crosses borders a lot easier than a lot of other forms of media mm-hmm. a lot of times. Like just the wild success of like K-pop, let's say.
Yeah.
Just being huge everywhere, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and like it's wild. And then it opens up more, but it I thought using music as effectively as you do throughout this whole story to help tell us more about the world or to tell more about the history or to even share some of those values and morals is really impressive because it speaks a lot more clearly, I think. Like it makes it
relatable.
Yeah, easier for us to open our minds to, maybe, or other people to open their minds to, but it was pretty cool.
The anthropomorphizing, I always say that name wrong, but using the animals kind of as characters in it, like even, you know, Mbambe, if I'm saying his name right, is familiar, I think, to many cultures because of stuff like Nintendo. I mean, he's his own character, but you kind of had that forever with, what's his name, Ganon. Like you see those kind of anthropomorphized characters and even in Disney. So having those in there, I think, helped relate for me as well, too.
Yeah, the I think the biggest inspirations for this one were like the folk tales, obviously, but also the stories of Jean de La Fontaine, like the Hare and the Turtle. I think that's the most well known one, and the Robin Hood Disney movie.
Oh yeah,
that's like my favorite Disney movie. That's
that one's awesome.
It's a great movie.
Like it, which I mean, that movie was inspired by Jean de La Fontaine as well. Like the whole taking animals and making them into archetypes and making sort of gags out of that, which is why you end up with the main vibe I wanted from this was to make it seem like a folk tale as much as possible, which is why I really like my characters who are very archetypal, is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so
that's how I've done it. That's how I pronounce it.
Yeah, so the idea was very archetypal characters convey the idea through a sort of one trait archetype. And I think like there are like four prominent animals in the book, which I feel like all of them represent their idea pretty well. Like the I'm almost tempted to do a spin-off with the hippo and the rabbit.
I was gonna say, yeah, the hippo, the hare, the hog. That was the one that really, the way that, you know, your different chapters moods change, but that one were kind of is a story of how the rumors kind of destroy that community. It changes to black and white and almost seems, you know, like a horror tale, which it is a horror tale, but not the traditional horror tale people are probably used to reading.
Yeah, it's I took that one from the Twilight Zone. The monsters on
Monster do on Maple Street.
Exactly.
Yeah. That one.
Which is the same thing where all the people all think the aliens are coming, but the aliens just sit on the hill and just let the community tear each other apart by just the fear of them.
Yeah, exactly. I really like the concept of having just random everyday people react to something extraordinary. Which in this case, I kind of shot myself in the foot because it's really complicated to really get the sense of, to really convey the idea that this is weird. You live in a world where you have like magic and talking animals, but this one specific instance is actually weirder than the others.
No, it didn't trip me up when I was reading that at all. Like I stop and think like, wait a minute, I suspended my disbelief already, but this is a stretch or whatever. Like, no, I just rolled right through it, man. It was so captivating.
Good.
Definitely, yeah. When you were making the story also, was this always, I mean, clearly you did now you did the storyboards, basically the art first and then kind of did the writing. Did you always like intend for it to be a all ages or YA book, or did it kind of just, I'm guessing yes, because of all your influences, but did that kind of just the way it came out?
It wasn't intended to be anything. Okay. That's the weird thing of like the whole YA thing happened. It was TKO that decided to do it, to do like market it that way. I just made my thing, I think. I think in my mind, I see it as more adult than it probably appears to others. I think it's because of the subject matter and all the different themes that it touches and all that stuff. But because of the visual style and the fact that I don't really push into all the gory or like there's not gore. There's maybe one panel where you have a character laying in a pool of blood, but that's it. There's no swearing. I even went with the cartoony thing of when one of them is supposed to swear, I have a poop instead. And what I mean, he uses a Wolof word. So for someone who comes from Senegal, they would understand the swear. But basically I just did it the way it is, not because I had an audience in mind, but because of the influences I have, where so many manga and comics and cartoons that I was into introduced me and spoke about really complicated things without needing to be something that a child wouldn't be able to see.
Yeah.
So it wasn't never a question for me of like trying to make it adult, because I feel like it is adult already, but it is still accessible to a child in a way where they will be entertained by it and also I hope interested and actually learn stuff and understand what it's about. And I hope that it's the kind of book where, just like I rewatched Teen Titans, the TV show a few weeks ago. And there are things that I understand even better now that I'm 28 than I did when I was a kid. And I hope that the same thing happens with my book of a kid reading it and then years later reading it again and being like, there are certain things in it that I never saw or didn't understand as much, or you know, I want it to be the kind of book that someone can keep and revisit over the years.
It works just like that with manga too. Like as someone my age, I fully enjoyed it, and that's kind of how manga works too. Kids read it, but then people our age read it too, because it's kind of just works on all levels. So that was really nice. My wife actually just rewatched Teen Titans not too long ago. So, I mean, it's definitely rewatchable. Cartoon. I miss that. I need to go cartoon watch sometimes.
And it's a rough one too. Like there are certain episodes where the the pain of adulthood gives a whole new context to certain things. Because, especially when it gets like into feelings and the whole arc they have with like Terra being controlled by Slade, and he's literally controlling her body and making her betray her friends and stuff. And like, it's all done in a way where a kid will understand. But the older you get, the more you start to understand like the creepiness of that. Mental. I even want to say slave
like that.
Relationship, and it gets better as you get older, which is quite the feat, I think.
Yeah,
definitely.
Talking to some people about like how the Miyazaki movies are like that. How they have like the so a lot of them have like super dark undertones that are like very adult. But they tell it in ways where, you know, kids can watch it and still get something out of it. Like, the whole family watches it and everyone gets something different out of it.
There's a video on YouTube that talks about Kiki the witch and about how it's about artistry and or freelance or the importance of the weight of work on your health and stuff like that. And I was like, when I was a kid, I didn't like that. Didn't register at all. But now that you mention it,
yeah. now when she gets sad and like loses her powers, there, it's a lot. That's a extra sad there. Like, oh no, I gotta go find my striped shirt boy with glasses who's building a plane bike. Like, I need somebody to reinvigorate me here.
Yeah, but yeah, I hope the book has sort of the same effect of bringing new things. So we'll see. Maybe in 10 years, I'm going to have some kid show up and be like, I had the book when I was 12, and now I'm, I don't know, 22, and still like it for completely different reasons. I hope that happens.
Yeah, you could be the spark that lights their fire like Shaman King did it for you, or maybe become a comic book writer or creator, and they go, it was your book.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's a lot of pressure, that kind of stuff.
I bet it happens way easier than you think. Like, just think about access to books. Like, you just have to have one book touch you, and then like, it inspires you to be that. I mean, it is a lot of pressure to put on yourself on future generations writing because of your work.
Well, it's a lot of pressure that we just put on right now. But no, I think that this book will do that. I'm excited to even reread it again. Just in a few weeks when it comes out physically, it's sooner than that, right?
I think it's July 6th.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, and like a month or so. So yeah. Like, I'm really excited to revisit it again and read it like with the new eyes that I have from talking with you. Even I think we'll open it up to like a deeper level, because it already felt like this book is kind of operating on a lot of levels already. So
yeah.
Now knowing a little bit more behind the process and behind the person, I'm like, oh man, when I read this again, it's going to slap even harder. It's going to be awesome.
I got to say too, as a fellow nerd, how cool was it? Like, when I was a kid, I loved my X-Men comics and X-Men trading cards, that your first book's coming out with trading cards. Like, when they announced that, I'm like, that's awesome.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, I can't wait to like receive mine. Like, I'm gonna have.
I thought you were about to look down and like pull out the full shuffle. Like, here they are.
No, I was looking at the books. Actually, I have like a whole pile of the books. I'm waiting for my cards. Maybe mostly because I have never had like goodies of my own work done before.
Yeah, it's gotta be.
Like,
cool.
It is a very new thing still, because this is my first. I want to say professionally. Done book, I'm experiencing a lot of things for the first time, and having like trading cards of my own characters is a very nice first.
Yeah, I can only imagine. That's got to be like humbling and also like completely awesome to be like, wow, they like my book so much, I made these trading cards.
Yeah,
I mean, I would keep them up, like, I don't know, on the wall or something, somewhere on display if I were you in my room, and be like, these are my trading cards.
I'm waiting for my dad has said that he wants to have an action figure of the Warthog.
Oh, that's awesome.
I was just about to say, action figures got to be in the works.
Yeah.
These designs are too cool to not have a figure made, that's for sure.
Hopefully TKO does it soon. A lot of comic companies now are doing their own action figure lines and kind of hiring people. So,
oh God, I want that.
I see it happening.
I really want that. Like that'd be awesome. I don't design them to be toys, but I feel like they could be toys in a very good way. Like they have very blocky shapes that could work really well. No, you've hyped me up.
They're really like dynamic, is what I'm saying. Yeah, I agree with you very much.
I understand.
So.
Like, as a man in his 30s, let his wife get him action figures for his birthday this week. I understand. toys are awesome.
Heck yeah.
And in the many figures I see in Chaz's background as well, too.
Yeah, I was going to say, probably don't look too hard behind me. a lot of books. And
well, I mean,
a couple of toys and figures.
On the other side of it, I have Star Wars figures. So.
Awesome. Yeah. Is that Bo?
I feel like that's our generation with like comic books and toys where it transcends to us all in adulthood. Like even now, a lot of the action figures I see, like these House of X ones, I'm like, these aren't for kids. These are for people that are like me.
They come with alternate hands. As a kid, I never cared about that. I was like, does he have a batarang or a grappling hook or a cape attachment? Is there a piece I can put on him? And then it's like, now I get a figure and he comes with like eight hands and I'm like, oh yeah, one hand is like this and one's like that.
Spider-Man's got 150 points of articulation. What were those ones?
Those figures are crazy. Yeah. See, there's ones like $150 to have those.
That was a huge point for me. That was a huge point for me when I was a kid, the number of points of articulation. Because playing with my toys, I would use my eyes as a camera. So it was very important to me to have like figures that could strike certain poses so that the camera angle could be cool.
I like that. Because there are books I've read. Well, we did one book a while back called Terror Assaulter, and it looked like somebody had just posed action figures and then was like, all right, cool. Perfect. But they were the kind of action figures with like, I don't know, 6 points of articulation, maybe. Like knees, hips, shoulders, elbow, head. That's
it. The G.I. Joe figures,
So I definitely understand that, like, posing them to get just the right look. Yeah, the more articulation, the better. I'm with you.
I struggle now with being a collector and the play with toys. Like, when I look at figures that I like, I'm like, do I just put it on the wall or do I open it? I mean, I know some people don't have that problem, but I do.
I say open them. Open them all.
I'm planning on building like an X, probably don't even know, as an X-Men wall in my apartment, though, and just have them kind of there. But that's I hope they get action figures. I mean, so many of these characters would look so great. And then even with like Awa and Mansoor and Mabambe, I mean, with his culture's like weapon, you could even add that on Mansoor and kind of build an armor, kind of their different looks throughout the books. I mean, that would be awesome.
Yeah. We're getting it already. We're coming up with the best pitch for these figures right now. I love it.
We have to talk to Sebastian later. I'll be like, Sebastian, we want these Jalea action figures.
We'll
start marketing now.
Listen, we were talking about it, and we think figures are the way to go.
I mean, tell him. Like this, I feel like this is the type of situation where the book was kind of difficult to find a publisher for. And I was really lucky to like find TKO because they were very open. Sebastian especially was always open to like everything I wanted to do. And the trading cards was their idea. So like I feel like this is the case of a publisher that's very open-minded and interested in doing new things. So if they see that there's interest in something, I don't see why they would not jump on the occasion.
Yeah, definitely. Then I mean, interest would be there. I'd get them. I know all of us would get them. So I mean, I can only imagine the younger readers and stuff in July that fall in love with the book will definitely want them as well.
Oh God!
I mean, just advertise the book next to the action figures, the trading cards, and there you go. You got a sale right there with 60 points of articulation. We already put it in there. So, is there anything else you wanted to talk about with the book, or any other questions you have for us before we begin to wrap up?
Basically, I have one that I tend to like. I think I'm going to ask every person who's read it, which is basically the main takeaway you guys had from the book. Because I'm always curious to making a book is kind of like taking my brain and putting it on some kind of like shareable platform. So I'm always curious to be like, what what was people's reaction?
I mean, it's kind of the end moral, but it's kind of a story that needs to be retold over and over again, but kind of like knowledge and power should belong to us, all the people, and kind of putting it in a use, kind of, as you say, what would you choose? Would you have one person hoard it, or should it go on to everyone? Which I got kind of the messages that these things, these tales, knowledge and power should be shared with all of us, not just one person, and kind of manipulating everyone else with, you know, having that to themselves, and sharing it with everyone else.
Yeah. I think my big takeaway was that true strength is moral strength, is it's from within. As long as you're true to the person that you are and what you want to see in the world, then you could be the strongest person in the room.
Okay, good. I feel like I made something useful.
Definitely.
I mean, it's beautiful too. So you made something beautiful and useful. Yeah. Don't forget the first part.
I mean, that was my main reaction once I finished it, was I'm glad something like this is out. So, I mean, even though it's for all ages, it's something I could pass on to my daughter and let her read. And I think it'll teach her good habits to take and kind of get good lessons from it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
And I think all ages should really be any age. There's no. There's
10 to 70. Like, 10 to 70. 10 to 80.
There we go.
You don't even have to stop at 70.
You're like Lego now. Once you reach 99, that's it. You can't
see the guys in your shop that are like in their 70s, Chaz. It exists. It happens.
Oh, no, it's true. Yeah.
Yeah. It is always good.
But yeah, no, there's a lot of good takeaways from this book, but those would be our two, I guess.
Junior, I want to thank you again so much for coming on. The book does come out, everyone, on July 6th this year. Make sure to check it out or pre-order now from TKO. And Junie, if you want, do you want people to find you on social media? Would you want to give out a social media handle?
Do I want to stay hidden? I am on
Twitter. It's up to you if you don't want to. It's
yeah, yeah. You're cool.
Yeah, I generally prefer to stay hidden. One thing I can advertise, I guess, is that the same month of July, I have issue 6 of Truth and Justice at DC Comics that comes out.
Oh, awesome.
Oh, cool.
And I drew Damian Wayne. So like it's a whole story about Robin celebrating his birthday and having to fight old Sumerian gods. So that was
really cool.
Man, I'm hyped up. That's my favorite Robin, so I'm in.
And Sumerian gods gets me. That's awesome. I love that culture. Learning more about it. So, well, thank you so much again. I can't wait to see your future work and invite you on again whenever your next book comes out or Tales of Julia, whatever you do next. We're excited for. And I'll definitely keep in contact. I want to thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, guys. Bye.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you.
You have a great day. That was Junie Baugh. Thank you guys so much for listening. As always, you can find me on Twitter at PoetAir33. You can find the show at Outside The with a 0. And then Chaz, where could they find you?
You can find me on Twitter as well, at Chaz Simons.
Well, you can always find Jack at Cinesthetics on Twitter, and that's with the X at the end. And is it?
And an underscore, I think, between the sin and the aesthetic.
Yeah, and then this is our TKO showcase. Next week, we're going to be coming out with editor-in-chief and writer of The Devil's Red Bride, Shirtless Bear Fighter, and Scales and Scoundrels, Sebastian Gerner, which we're really excited to talk to him. And right now on our Twitter, you can go and vote in a poll that ends tomorrow, which is for the creator we're going to cover winter of this year. And it's between Rick Remender and Jonathan Hickman. So if you'd like to see us cover any of their books, kind of go in and vote. Remender's kind of edging out right now. So any of you Hick heads out there, as I'm calling you now, want to come in and start throwing your love for Jonathan Hickman, get out there. And I think that's something we'll try for the next season, is each of us will have a choice, or at least between me and Chaz, because Jack's got a definitive choice he's got, which I think we're okay with since Jack hasn't picked one creator yet. So I think we got to go with that, though it'll definitely be a selected bibliography on that creator as well.
Yeah. And keep your eye peeled to our Twitter, just because polls are coming. We're gonna ask you guys for a lot more feedback and information
and a lot more polls. Yeah, a lot of fun stuff coming your way. And then also,
if you miss this one, don't worry about it. There's gonna be more that you could vote on in the future.
Yeah, we want to be interactive with all you guys that listen, the page turners, which we've seen now more through the poll, which we appreciate. And as always, our Discord is also on our Twitter, but we love the interaction. We want to talk to you guys about all these books that we all love. So don't be shy.
Yeah,
come and chat with us.
And pre-order Julia from TKO. get them trading cards. Get this hooked into your veins, this experience. It's a total knockout.
It's a totally fantastic.
Or is that technical knockout?
Well, it's a technical knockout because it's technically great.
Oh, okay. Either way, both works. It knocked me out, though, this book. Fitting for our TKO coverage.
And Chaz?
Turn the page and wash your hands.
Outside the pages.